Salute, a program of the United States Treasury featuring Robert Merrill, Brett Morrison, and the Treasury Orchestra under the direction of David Brookman. Buy bonds and more bonds. Let's all back the attack. Buy more than before.
How do you do? This is Brett Morrison. A newcomer to our shores may ask you about Americans. You may find him in the libraries looking among books on travel or economics or biography to find one that will tell him what America really is. If you find such a man, lead him gently to the shelf labeled Mark Twain and place in his hands a copy of Huckleberry Finn or Tom Sawyer and say, "Begin here, my friend." Mark Twain touched the very heart of us. And today we salute this venerable character that no other nation in the world could have created except America. When Mark Twain was old and white and honored among men, he was once asked to speak at a banquet. He refused, saying he didn't want to make a speech. He just wanted to talk. Just talk. I would renew my youth and talk and talk and talk and have the time of my life. I would march the unforgotten and unforgettable antiques by and name their names and give them reverent hail and farewell as they passed. The days of youth were so full to the brim with the wine of life. Yes, for Mark Twain, they were full to the brim. His rich and enviable boyhood was spent in the freest riverside excursions at Hannibal on the Mississippi River. As a young man, he learned to pilot the riverboats along the treacherous tree-margined course of that mother of waterways. And it was an old familiar sound to him to hear the splash of the sounding lead hit the water and the voice call out, "Mark Twain," which meant to note down 2 fathoms. It was a sound he so loved that when he later became a newspaper writer in Virginia City, Nevada, he changed his own name, Samuel Clemens, to the sound of the river call he loved best of all to hear in the time of youth. The river never left him. When he wrote Life on the Mississippi, it was his document of what he felt was the heart and body of the nation. Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer were children of the river. All life and philosophy to Mark Twain was river-born. He never heard our song of the Mississippi, Old Man River, but had he heard it, he would have understood the rich fabric of its word picture as Robert Merrill sings it to you now.
Darkies all work on the Mississippi. Darkies all work while the white folks play. Pulling those boats from the dawn to sunset. Getting no rest till the judgment day. Don't look up and don't look down. You don't dismay the white folks frown. Bend your knees and bow your head and pull that rope until you're dead. Let me go away from the Mississippi. Let me go away from the white men's boats. Show me that stream called the River Jordan. That's the old stream that I long to cross. that old man River. He must know something, but don't say nothing. He just keeps rolling, he keeps on rolling along. He don't plant taters, he don't plant cotton, and them that plants them is soon forgotten. But old man River, he just keeps rolling. You and me, we sweat and strain, the body all aching and racked with pain. Tote that barge, lift that bale, it's a little drunk and you're ending jail. Ah, it's weary and sick of trying. I'm tired of living and feet of dying. But old man and labor, he just keeps rolling on.
Mark Twain had it all figured out that if he hadn't gone west, he'd never have been a prominent writer. If his brother hadn't become an official of the state of Nevada, he would never have gone west. And if his brother hadn't been a good printer, he'd never have been an official. And if Mark Twain hadn't had a brother, he'd never have been a river pilot. And on, back until he satisfied himself that all of us are the result of a chain of events, which all started a long time ago when there was a Garden of Eden. If that apple was still intact, there wouldn't even have been a human race, which certainly would have hampered Mark's literary career. Mark Twain's career was a thing of many virtues. As a humorist, he was organic with the American people. And as a student of social values, his deep perceptions lent overtones to all his works. A few things give us the fullness of the essence of democracy so well, as his Yankee in King Arthur's Court, from which a musical show had been written and recently revived. This song is from the stage version of Twain's delightful book.
I laughed at sweetheart I met at school. All indiscreet hearts seemed romantic fools. A house in Iceland was my heart's domain. I saw your eyes, now castles rise in Spain. I took one look at you, that's all I meant. And then my heart stood still. My feet could step and walk, my lips could move and talk, and then my heart stood still. Though not a single word was spoken, I could tell you knew that Uncle Class.
To say that Mark Twain lived and died an honored man is to say too little, and to repeat anecdotes of his delightful humor is to touch only one side of this eager individual. Perhaps one of the best cues to the character of this man who dipped his pen into the fount of human experience and drew forth sparkling blood of human sweetness is that little-known episode which took place when he was 67, 8 years before he fell asleep over his book. He returned to the scene of his childhood at Hannibal and called together the old men he'd once played with as a child. Here were the Huckleberries and the Toms and the Jims and the Tads he'd written about. Their collective ages were beyond counting almost. But on that day, those laughing, happy old children went with Mark to the haunts of childhood and lived over again the jobs. Age dropped from their lives as they shinnied up trees, swam in the old swimming holes, planned pirate trips, floated on rafts, played cowboy and Indian in the forest, swiped apples, and felt for one brief day golden and wonderful, the feel of earth pressed through the toes of their bare feet. Then it was done, and they left the world for the real children again, Or were they really the children after all? When sundown came, Mark left, having done the thing all of us would like to do, and done it well. For you see, for all his silver hair and his Oxford honors, he was just a little boy who knew that the lazy summer breeze and the ripple of the river was a sound that had more philosophy in it than all the speeches and high phrases the learned men could utter.
On the meadow is drifting away, for it's daybreak, the sun's in the sky now, and flowers break through their blanket of hue. My window, a sky full of dreams, as the white clouds sail on through the blue. At daybreak, I daydream of you.
The tempo of this war is hitting its highest point. Government expenditures for war are at the peak. More money is needed now. In proportion to who has the most money, individuals are not buying their share of war bonds. Farmers of America must help correct this situation. Money will be needed urgently at a future date to replace and repair farm equipment, machinery, and buildings. War bonds will provide it. War bonds are the safest investment in the world. Return a good rate of interest, are easy and convenient to buy from bank, post office, rural mail carrier, or production credit association. So, buy bonds and more bonds. Back the attack. Buy more than before in the fifth war loan. The United States Treasury thanks Robert Merrill and Brett Morrison, who appeared on this especially transcribed program. The Treasury Salute was written by Forrest Barnes and directed by Paul Lewis. The music was conducted by David Brookman. This is Ben Grauer speaking.